This show is brought to you by Onnit.com. Go to Onnit.com and use code word CHURCH to get 10% off all of the great optimization products like Alpha Brain, New Mood, Shroom Tech Immune, Shroom Tech Sport, anything like that. Use code word CHURCH to get 10% off. Also, go to HitE6.com. That's HitE6.com. Better tasting, longer lasting. They're still doing the Pick 5 campaign. You get 5 e-cigs or e-cigars for $50. Use code word Joey's CHURCH. And go to nailedatlife.com, also the proud makers of Los Gumis Hermanos, for the premier vapor pen on the market for all the oil and wax smokers. Use code word Joey Diaz to get 20% off of the premier vapor pen on the market.
2, 1, 2, 3,
What's happening, you bad motherfuckers? This is Churchill. What's happening now, cocksuckers? Monday, June 1st. What? Just when you thought it was safe, a little James Brown for you, cocksuckers.
Thinking of losing that funky feeling, don't, cause you got to use what you got. Just what you want.
Oh shit. Lisa, yes. Ian Edwards. In the motherfucking house. Oh shit. Dirt. What? James Brown. I'm the motherfucking mic with Uncle Joe. Ian Edwards. Yeah. This motherfucking flying Jew. Laying it. Flaying it. Flicking it. Sticking it. What, you motherfuckers? Hope you had a great, sensational weekend. We're back for another fun-filled fucking show tonight here. We got my main man, Ian Edwards, in the house.
Yeah, man.
The Flying Jews in the house. What's Hello. Up with you? Look at you. You got fucking suntan.
I know. I never get suntan.
You're
I'm
the only
to the
Jew
beach.
Goes to the beach without SPF.
We had it. We just didn't use it.
You got to use it. Next thing you know, you want to sue the fucking sun. These Jews will sue anywhere. Can you imagine calling a personal injury lawyer? How you doing? The sun. I want to sue him. I want to take
him. Exactly. I think you got a case.
He's
got
we can make this happen. How's your back?
I was wearing a shirt. We didn't.
You didn't take your shirt off on the beach?
No, we didn't go to the beach. We went to. She got us like a Groupon for one of those paddle bikes, like kind of what Water Boxer does, except it's like a bike you sit on. So we just went around the marina. It was fun. I know you think I'm crazy, but it was a Marina Del Rey.
You said you deal with them. You said
yeah,
deal
I see.
With
them. I see what you're doing. I see.
It's a fucking amazing thing.
You're a strong man, Joey.
He couldn't go into the ocean. He could take a shirt with a fucking paddleboard about the fucking marina, and there was no sharks there when I needed them. Next time you're doing that, let me know. I'll put tuna fish in your pocket, cocksucker, and I'll call fucking the Jaws, whatever his name is.
Tuna fish.
What's up with you, player?
Man, just chilling. Just came from work, and I'm just headed. Traffic was easy. I thought it was going to be worse, and I just made it here, and I'm glad to be here, man. And I like fucking with Joey Diaz. I fucks with you.
Good. No. That's tremendous. Now, do you shoot every week, or are you just writing the 6 episodes right now?
We're just writing the 6 right now, and we're going to start shooting in a few weeks. And we should be done by, let's say, July, and it's going to air in August. And, yeah, it should be fun. We're over at the Fox lot, and just... Just niggas on the Fox lot.
How fucking great is it to walk on the Fox lot? Especially for me, I got felonies. So as I walk in, they're like, how you doing, Mr. Diaz? And you're like, if these motherfuckers knew. If they knew and shit. So you're mingling, eating with people, right?
Yeah, they have no idea.
They have no fucking idea. Yeah. They got shrimp out and ham and cheese sandwiches, and there you are mingling, taking shit, housing things.
It's funny because they had like the Peanut Gang characters. Like walking around during lunchtime, they're taking photos with them. And like I don't know who's in the costume, and they don't know who they're taking photos with. So it's fuck it. It's like it's whatever.
Just it's great to just walk around the fight, and it's my favorite lot is Paramount. That's the one where I walk on the lot, and I'm like, damn,
right?
I can't believe they let me in here without a fucking security guy on me. Like I'm just walking the fucking around. Like it's. I remember the first audition I went through was on the Fox lot. Mm-hmm. And I had to walk to the other motherfucking end because the building that belongs to the dude who wrote NYPD Blue. Right. At that time, that motherfucker had a building.
Damn.
But it was all the way at the end. And you don't know. You got a shirt on, Lee. That's that sun's beating
Lots
on
are
you.
Huge, yeah.
That's a hot lot.
That's a hot lot.
That's a sun. That's like a equator lot. The sun hits that shit like
no,
all over.
I'm going to tell you what the hottest lot is.
What?
Sony.
Sony?
Really?
It's, yeah.
Culver City, right there, Century City, Culver City.
Yeah.
On what street is that?
Venice,
Washington or something.
Yeah, like Washington.
Culver.
That lot, dog. I had a fucking the old. See, in the old days, they would let you park and then walk around the lot, cross over, and you're right there.
Mm-hmm.
I think after 9/11, they'd make you cross on that side, you cross across Washington and go through. So I was used to that easy pimp shit.
Right.
And all of a sudden they switched it on my ass in the hottest day of fucking April.
Uh-huh.
Like a March, you know, one of those hot days that happens in L.A.?
Uh-huh.
I have a black velour mafia sweatsuit on. Pants fucking with no underwear on. And I can feel the balls dripping on the velour.
You're just dripping by the time you get
to the God. And I got to that audition and it was for Spider-Man 2.
Oh, shit.
I'll never forget that. I was drenched. And I got in there and there was 30 gangsters in there. I'm like, I'm not getting this. I don't even know where I'm staying. This is a waste of my fucking time. But I got so wound up and so scared from looking at these motherfuckers,
mm-hmm.
that I just went in there and got it.
You went in
like, just stole it. Like, said, fuck it. I am not letting these motherfuckers take it from
me. I sweat all the way here. Fuck this.
Oh, my God. I was sweating profusely, though.
It might be a little bit different for you, Joey, because you went on auditions. But, like, Ian, how many times did you walk by the Fox, drive by the Fox lot? And now you're like, it must be crazy. Like, that's, I worked in TV for a few years, and the only, I worked on Sunset and Gower lot, which is gross. Like, I never got to work on, like, a nice, like, Fox, CB, like, one of those lots. That's, like, the one thing I wish I had done.
It's always kind of amazing. The thing about the Paramount lot you mentioned, I remember, like, walking on that lot with Hugh Moore. You know Hugh Moore? Comic? He's from
I know Hugh Moore. Okay.
And then, you know, Paramount has that big blue backdrop, like, just sitting on the lot, and they shoot things there or up against it. And then one day we was walking there. I forgot why we were there. I think we were about to interview for jobs, some writing jobs. And he said, it's a beautiful day, isn't it? I said, what do you mean? And he's like, any day you could walk on the Paramount lot is a beautiful day. And I was like, oh, shit, he's right. We're winning right now, whether we get these jobs or not. Because this is what we came here to do. And, like, we were in the vicinity of it. So it's like, all right, cool.
You know, I really like you. I always liked you because you're a gentleman. So, and Lee, I love. I could tell you this with fucking, there's not too many things that bring me pleasure in life.
Mm-hmm.
I can't lie to you. Most of the time I'm sitting there going, where's the gun? You know what I'm saying? Like, where's the fucking gun? Nothing gets my dick harder when I look at that audition. And it says I got to go to Paramount, Fox, Sony, Gower lot, that's disgusting. You're absolutely right. Sunset, not Sunset Gower, but yeah, even Sunset Gower.
Well, there's two of them on like Santa Montana.
Johnson, the Tribune lot.
Yeah, it's a fucking nightmare.
I worked over there. Shitty lot.
Shitty lot.
Yeah.
But when you're a felon and you've been in prison and you don't have a fucking agent, nobody wants to manage you.
Right.
The only person who's giving you spots is Mitzi Shaw.
Right.
And all of a sudden, here you want a lot to go read for fucking, you know, Chaz Palminteri or something.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody has an idea. Like, I remember being up till 2, you know, getting it down. And just when you walk in that lot, you're like, fuck, if these people knew that half the shit I did, they wouldn't let me on this lot.
Well, describe what you see, because, like, a lot of people do, like, don't know what, like, lots are like. It's, like, huge buildings, and they have signs everywhere, and you see, like, reserved for, like, stars, like, all over the place. It's just, it's
producers, and there's, you know, there's sting shooting.
Yeah, it's like the history of shit you see in your entire life. Things that you thought you'd never be near, and you're there. And it just kind of blows your mind. Like, I didn't know I'd get this close.
Have either of you ever worked on, like, a stage that had, like, a really cool show that you used to watch?
It's funny because you guys mentioned that. I was doing 2 and a Half Men. And I was just basically an extra a couple of years ago with Ashton Kutcher when we were dancing on the street.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it was boring as fuck, man. And you know me, I always bring 22 joints with me. I don't care what lot I'm on.
That's an understatement.
And during lunch, I'll watch something. They got you on camera, so you got to make believe you're smoking a cigarette and then double fist it. But I was smoking a dube one day. It was raining or something. That's why I knew they wouldn't catch me. And I went to one of those coves, and I'm smoking, and I'm halfway done with the joint. And I look, and it said, it had a list on the wall of what shows. So
they
shot I Love Lucy there. Mm-hmm. I put that joint out so fucking quick, out of respect.
Out of respect.
Where Steve Byrne shot his show. Remember, he tweeted all the shows they had shot there. Yeah, there's something to that. Yeah, there is something to that.
There's something to that. It gives you, you can't. It's something relatable to it, because no matter where you were in the world, you were watching this thing, and now you're aware this thing was shot, and it does strike you a little bit, at least a little bit. It gets you a little bit.
It's always fucked with me. I just don't let it take over.
Right.
I just make believe like it's not happening.
Mm-hmm.
Like being like at a table reading, there's other people in the room, and you just gotta act like, you know, this ain't happening.
Right.
This motherfucker.
This is normal.
This guy is not standing 10 feet from me. I watched this guy kill a motherfucker in this movie and this movie and this movie. It's really fucking surreal. I don't even know how to describe it to people. I can't because I'm embarrassed. I'd rather tell you a story about stabbing somebody than telling you a story
if that's
about
easier.
Being on a lot next to this guy and what I was going through. The hardest lot I was ever on was shooting a movie with Dick Van Dyke. That old motherfucker with fucking little balls under his eyes and shit. He's old. I couldn't keep it together at all. At no point could I keep it together. I was crying.
Damn.
Every time I looked at him, I had to put my head down. Until finally, he was like, why is this fucking guy crying, bro? He's a big fucking dude. What's the problem? And I had to tell him what happened.
He must go through that a lot, though. That must happen all the time. Like, do you think if, like, Tom Cruise does a movie, it probably takes him a couple days to calm, like, all the rest of the actors down? Like, it must.
You know, I don't know.
What happened with De Niro and Stallone?
I just say hello.
But, it, like, it wasn't... Maybe it was because they were already, like, into the movie. But, like, it must be crazy, like, getting to work with...
You just say hello. You go like that with your hand, and someone will come over and give you their hand and say, nice to meet you. And you say, yeah. And then they ask you a question. You ask them a question. At the end of the night, you go home. I don't talk unless I'm spoken to.
Right.
You know, that's what I was taught. I don't reach out. I love you.
Yeah, I don't try to.
Where'd you get that motivation from? I don't say dick.
Right.
How are you doing? Good? Yeah, yeah. You ready for this? Yeah, I am.
I just try to have a good, normal time and not fuck it up.
Right. Yeah, that's it. That's all, you know.
That's all you're saying to yourself when you're just don't fuck it up.
Not even. You just like, all right, just be normal, Ian. Hi. Do my thing. And then if they want to talk some more, you know, but, oh, okay. And then I'm out.
There's some motherfuckers I don't want to see.
Mm-hmm.
Because I would have a nervous breakdown. There's certain motherfuckers. Damn. One of them would definitely be Muhammad Ali.
Really?
Like, remember when we went to the store? I don't know. How long you been out here now?
In Cali? I've been out here since, like, 2000. Around 2000,
Like, 3 or 4 years before that, I was at the store.
Mm-hmm.
And do you remember at the store, Lila Lee used to hang out there?
Right.
One of his daughters.
Yeah, one of his daughters. Yeah, she comes around once in a while.
Was a comic.
Yeah.
And I left one night, and 2 days later, they told me, dog, she came up here with Muhammad Ali. And I remember going, like, wow, and then going, I don't really want to see Muhammad Ali. I would have a nervous breakdown. I would start crying. Yeah, how would you act around Muhammad Ali? I don't know how I would fucking act. I don't know how I would act. I know I'd lose. I have to hug him. I'd have to hug him after a few fucking minutes.
Yeah, you got
to
hug the champ.
You got to hug him.
Yeah.
I'd hug Pete Rose.
Yeah.
Red Band said he saw him at the Glendale Mall looking lonely as a motherfucker.
Oh, I'd shake his hand.
Yeah, I would go
I
up
like
to
that Pete, dude.
Yeah, me too. I would go up to
Pete baseball.
That Skechers commercial made me laugh where he wasn't allowed to be in the hall, like his wife yelled at him. I don't know. I hope he gets taken back.
They're really campaigning for it now.
Yeah.
Something's going on.
It's crazy how quick we get like used to things. Like I was thinking about it as I was leaving tonight. I was like, I'm headed to work. And a year and a half ago, I would have been hating life and, like, worried until I was going to get home. And now I'm going to have fun and get high with Joey and Ian.
And that's your job.
And it's my job. That's dope. It's just so it's like, yeah, you guys have been on a ton of lots, and it's just, but it's to someone 20 years ago or to someone back in New Jersey or New York, they must just lose their mind.
Dog, if you would have told me 25 years ago I was going to walk on a Paramount lot, I would have spit in your fucking
face. Like, you have a favorite lot. Can you think about, like, that's crazy.
Oh, they got good food? I could mingle on that.
Oh, line. Shit. One time, you know Patrice.
Yeah, please.
One time, Patrice. This is a few years. This is before he died. Maybe like 3 years before he died. We were driving around Hollywood. He was in town. We had some meetings. And then we was driving around Hollywood. We were going to go get something to eat. Then, in the middle of Hollywood, there was this lot. Maybe around Vine-ish. There's this lot. And it was set up for, like, food, like, for, like, a shoot, you know? And it was lunchtime. And then we just, like, I dare you that we should go over there and go get something to eat. And he's like, bet, let's do it. And then we pulled on with the car, said some bullshit to the security guy. We drove on, and then we got online at the catering shit. And then we got some food, and we sat down with the extras and started eating. And then I think it was, like... one of those TNT shows like Law and Order, and he knew one of the main actors from the show, so then we moved from the extras to sit over there and eat with them. And we could have paid for lunch somewhere, but it was just more fun to just fuck around and do this thing. And we had lunch, and then we bounced.
I've never had the
balls. And we got some. And we got some numbers from some of the extra chicks, because they use hot extras. Free lunch, numbers, because everybody thinks y'all doing the same shit. And then they noticed that people were paying like Patrice attention more attention. And then we had more freedom than them, because this didn't mean nothing to us. If we got kicked out, it was just gonna add to the story. So we were just looser, and they were just on their best behavior. Like, who's these loose dudes?
I would never have the balls to do that. Just the thing of getting thrown
really?
Out. And somebody saying they threw Joe Diaz out, he tried to get a lunch, I would fucking have a heart attack.
Everything you've done, and you can't do that? You can't take a lunch?
There's a lot of things.
Is that where you draw the line?
Yeah.
That's funny, man.
Yeah. That's fucking crazy. No, I don't have the balls to do it. I couldn't get away with it.
We just thought the shit would be fun, man.
It's fucking fun. That is hysterical.
We just thought it would be fun.
That's like going to somebody's party when you weren't invited.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Those
are
the best
parties.
That's
like driving by. Yeah, it's like driving by and seeing a party going, let's take a chance. Let's go in there. You know, you got a bag of weed, just tell them we got weed. Let's see what happens. They let you in. When people see you with a drug, they let you in. Oh, he's all right.
He belongs in this party.
Who sent you here? Who invited you? I don't know.
We're drugs.
We went to the supermarket. Now, how long have you been doing comedy?
Like over 20 years. That's what I tell people.
Now, you're a great writer. Mm-hmm. But how did you get into the other side of the writing? Like, how long have you been doing that?
I was doing stand-up, and then one time... was in New York. I started in New York, and this guy, Rick Dorfman, he used to be a manager under Barry Katz, had his own company. He was running Gotham at the time, and he said, "Hey, they're auditioning for writers for Keenan Ivory Wayans' talk show," and he was like, "Do you want to come down and do a set for this lady, and she'll determine if you're good enough to be a writer on the show?" I was like, "All right, bet," you know, and then. I went down there that night, and I was hot back then. Like, I had a set that was getting standing O's if I did it. Like, it was a hot 10. Like, I'd thrown away all my old shit, started working on this thing at the Boston Comedy Club, and, like, built it up. And then there was a point where I was worried. I was doing the Boston so much, I wasn't even doing black clubs. But then we had this black comedy competition in Jersey, and I drove all my friends there that night. I was looking for parking. They all jumped out the car, ran into the contest venue, wrote their names down, and when I walked in, there was like, we all signed up. So then I signed up last. And I said, you motherfuckers, I drove you here. I got to drive you back home, and you didn't sign my name on the list, so I'm last. So everybody goes, here's a hot show, everybody does good, and I stand them with my 10. I said, oh, shit, this shit works anywhere. This is dope. So then I got on Def Comedy Jam with that set. And I also did that set for this lady at the Gotham. And she was like, you got any writing samples? I was like, yeah, I got some writing samples. And I had some ideas written down, and I had some completely written out. And the only reason why I had them completely written out is a few years earlier, a homeboy of mine, another comic, Arnold Acevedo. I don't know if you know Arnold Acevedo. He's a Puerto Rican dude. He's from Westbury, Long Island. And we used to do a lot of shows together. And we all hung out. And after our shows, we used to just hang out on the corner and just talk and just laugh for hours, you know what I'm saying? And then I don't know how the topic came up, but he was like, yeah, man, I got 362 sketches. And I'm like, what? He got 362 sketches? Like, why? He said, just in case if I get a job on SNL, I don't have to come up with a new sketch every week. I got sketches. And I was like, oh, shit, I don't have no sketches. I'm like, how the fuck am I going to get 300 and something sketches? And I was like, calm down, Ian. I panicked at first inside. I'm just pretending to still be in this conversation with these dudes we're having fun with. But on the inside, I'm panicked because I'm like, I'm unprepared for this comedy life or for the possibilities that this thing could branch out into. Now I was like, calm down. Just whenever you always have ideas, but you just never write them down. You promise to write them down, you never do. So next time you have an idea, either write it down on a piece of paper, go home and completely finish it, or at least jot it down so that you don't forget it. And then it'll accumulate up to. And then I calmed down. So then I started doing that, and then this opportunity came along years later, and it was like 2000 or 99. So I had to I went home that night, finished like 6 sketches. I had 3, wrote 3, and faxed them in. And then it was like, mid-December. And I waited to hear from him for like 2 weeks. And he's like, you got the job. Come out here in January. And I just came out and did the shit. And then the show got canceled 3 months later.
Poor Keith.
Yep.
And you've been here ever since.
Yeah. The first few years here, like the first 3 years, I love New York so much. I'm like New York, you know. I love New York, and you don't want, when you, once you're from New York, you're proud of that title. I'm from New York, you know. And I was here, so I spent most of my time in New York, even though I had an apartment here. And then I said to myself, Ian, you got to be in LA to do the shit you want to do. You can't like be in New York just doing what you used to. You have an apartment in LA and you came there, and I decided to stay, because one night after the show got canceled, me and Hugh Moore was driving around, because he was writing on the show that Chris Spencer had, that Sinbad took over, and we were writing on competitive shows, and we're both from New York, and we was playing Mobb Deep in the car one night, and then there was a line in the song that I never paid attention before, and Hugh Moore repeated it. He said, scared money don't make money. And that was the sign from God or the universe to say, stay in LA. Because when the show got canceled, there was like 3 weeks left on my contract. You know, there's a guaranteed contract up to a certain amount of weeks. And then, so then I got paid $9,000 for free. Right? So I had like $9,000 plus whatever money I was making in comedy in New York. So maybe I had $12,000, the most amount of money I ever had in my life. And I was like, I can go back to New York and do shows, and I'll definitely get shows, because I always was getting shows, and I could add to this $12,000, or I can scared money don't make no money, get an apartment here, pay rent, and stay here and see if I can get another writing job, which I have no connections to anybody. But I just have a feeling if I stick around, I'll get jobs. Things will happen. So then I just did that. I just listened to the Mobb Deep lyric, and I just stayed. And did
sometimes
that.
A sign. Yeah. I live on signs too, yeah. Man. Always have. Mm-hmm. Something sways me. I don't know. I came out here on the same thing. I came out here to shoot a pilot, mm-hmm. shot the pilot, didn't get picked up.
Right.
I had a choice, and I said, well, if I shot a pilot, let's see what else we can boogie. I'll give it 6 more months. Mm-hmm. Got a Taco Bell commercial, gave it a little more time, got this, got mm-hmm. that, and you fucking stay, you know? Right. You're like, what the fuck am I doing somewhere else? My tenure in New York was maybe 4 or 5 months in 94.
Mm.
I was terrible. Terrible. I was at the New York Comedy Club with Al.
Oh, shit.
I went down to Boston, and you motherfuckers scared me down there at 4th Street. Dave Chappelle was there. Moore.
It was tough.
And I just said, get me the fuck out of here. Nick DiPaolo was down on a Monday night. I was like, I don't belong here. And then I went to, but my club was in New York. I fucked with Lucian a little bit. He pissed me off. And I fucked with the dude, the other one that was. He was supposed to get a deal from Warner Brothers. Whatever happened to those fools? The guy on like 76th Street in the West Side.
That's
him and his wife.
I know who you're talking about.
Remember?
God damn it.
Yeah, they called me one night.
Stand Up New York.
The old owners called me one night and said, there's a big thing going on in New York. You should fly back this week. Josh will fly back. And did the festival for them for free. And yes. Mm-hmm. Something with a festival they were trying to start, that all this industry was going to be there. It just sounded too kinky to me. And then I'd see him at the Comedy Store, Al something. No. He'd always say, him and his wife, right?
Carol, I know who you're talking about.
She
taught
classes there or something.
Mm-hmm.
They did something there. Fucking crazy. That was a. But New York was what kick-started my career, because right. I saw something. I saw it. John Leguizamo doing time at Yale, old Triple N,
mm-hmm.
this old dump on like the in Hell's Kitchen, and they started their open mic at midnight,
right?
In 93, fucking midnight. Who starts to open mic at midnight? But they're like, people like, yeah, there's like 8 people there. I went in there, it was just drunk motherfuckers trying to get $1.50 beers or something, and there's comics on stage, and I'm like, this isn't what I signed up for.
Right.
At that age, at that time, I didn't know this was it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know this was what you did. So I never went back. And then I read something, or I talked to somebody at a club, and they're like, yeah, man, you got to go to those places. That's where you bomb. And I went down there. I was driving a limo, and I went to Kennedy Airport, and on the way back, I stopped in there, and I seen John Leguizamo on stage, and I said, I got it. All right, I'm going to pack my bags, go back to Colorado, and work on this shit. And that's when I really, really got serious about it.
Oh, so you went to Colorado. I didn't know that.
I started in Denver.
Oh, shit. I didn't know that.
I started in Denver in 91, but I was, like, selling drugs. And
right.
Was getting my dick sucked. I was doing open mic on Tuesdays. I was the host. All I had to do was 5 minutes, and I could do blow and sell pills at this place. So I took it seriously, but I didn't.
Right.
I was just killing time. I had just come out of prison. I couldn't. I had a felony. I didn't know what I wanted to do. But this seemed attractive. I didn't know about that traveling.
Right, right.
Being on the road like Bob Seger and shit. Fuck you. Sleeping in hotels. I like my bed. But
right.
But then people said, this is what you got to do. You got to travel. You got to do this. You got to do that. This is what needs to be done. So.
Yeah, I just didn't want to do a regular job. And so that's where it appealed to me. I didn't mind the travel. I might mind it now, but I know it's necessary. I'm going to have to do a bunch of traveling to get this thing to where I want it to get to. You know what I mean? To be just so independent that I can call my own shots. So, I'm down.
Depending on what career you want
right.
to have. You have a great career, but you also have something else. You're also very funny.
Mm-hmm.
And for you to take over this motherfucker like you're supposed to, you gotta get allies.
Right.
So you gotta go to every state and get one representative. Dania Edwards is the baddest motherfucker, smoothest black dude working right now. Nomination. You know what I'm saying? Fuck Billy D. Williams. He's done.
It's hilarious.
And little by little, bam, bam, bam. And all of a sudden you have these little ports that got you. It's like when you, these presidents, isn't the big thing fucking Iowa?
Yeah.
They get the signs like fucking Momos, and they're out there, a bunch of white people vote for this fucking idiot. Same thing with stand up.
Right.
We gotta get out there.
Right.
It's hard. It's rough on your family. It's rough on you at a certain age, but it's also fun.
Right.
It's rough till you get to your hotel room.
Right.
And now you go into work mode. Now you go into animal mode. You know, right. This is where I am. Last time I was here, I got my dick sucked. I went to this place. They got good wings. Let's talk about those wings. Let's talk about the dirty hoes in this town. Let's talk about this. Let's talk about that. And now you become a bond at that town, and you keep building. This time you go, you sell 300 tickets. The next time it's 450.
Mm-hmm.
The next time, now you haven't been there in a year and a half. So now you're going to double up and get 800 tickets.
Right.
You ready for a small theater? Now you got to go back and get that hump over. Now right. you're ready for a 1,000-seater, and this is it. But I don't. I was talking to Josh Wolf this morning, and he was asking me how I felt. And I told him, for me right now at this part of my life, I didn't think I'd be doing this, Ian.
Right.
I didn't think I'd be picking up my package and going to Salt Lake City and to Denver and to Boston. But this is it.
Right.
This is what we signed up for. Whether you're 52 or 22, this right. is what you signed up for. So I've fallen in love with it.
Right.
Again, because of the social media aspect of it.
Right.
I'm seeing motherfuckers. I communicate with an Avalon. What do they call that shit?
Avatar.
Avalon, Avatar, whatever the fuck it is. And all of a sudden, there they are in front of you, shaking your motherfucking hand. So the experience came through.
Right.
It really came full circle, this thing that started on a fucking wire. This is on a wire. We're doing this whole show on a fucking wire.
Right.
This is a wire. We have put our videos on this fucking wire. 20 years ago, a comic, Richard Pryor, couldn't go home and put his set up in the Comedy Store on a wire.
Right.
If you're serious about this game, you could put your set up every night on the fucking YouTube.
Right.
And it's the same thing as going on the road. You're picking up allies. That's a different avenue.
Right.
You know, you do a Comedy Central special. Comedy Central airs it Friday twice
and
once on Sunday. And then what are you going to do? You're going to go backwards and go on Showtime? Who has Showtime? Who has Showtime?
He said, who has Showtime?
Yeah, fucking people with perverts that want the whole thing with the blonde chick that comes out and talks to you. That chick's hot. She saved my life in hotels a couple times. That little blonde chick, she's like just like Felicia Michaels. If you close your eyes, you think it's fucking Felicia Michaels.
Hilarious.
Who?
This girl on Showtime, and they do a half-hour show, and she does the whole show naked.
Oh, Katie Morgan, I think?
I think that's her name. Really cute, blonde, squeaky voice.
Yeah.
And she talks about sucking dick and eating ass, and she plays video, and she'll talk about the history of finger banging. And it goes back to the caveman.
History of finger banging.
Yeah.
I love that.
No, this is... Listen, I didn't think I'd be on the fucking road at this age.
Right.
I thought I would just be collecting checks from the sitcom I did as The Neighbor.
Right, right.
I had just done the 7-year run on The Neighbor down at fucking, what's my favorite? There's another studio I like.
CBS Radford?
That, yeah, like I just went to CBS Radford, Studio City. What do you want for lunch, Joe? How about a little sushi dang? Give me the chicken teriyaki white meat and double up on the salad and a few pieces of albacore. Because that's how they roll over there.
Right.
That's what I thought. But no, it didn't turn out that way. So, but sometimes you want to go to China, but you end up in fucking Japan.
Right.
So it's the same difference.
This shit is just more powerful.
I love it.
Like this why you
this
talking
why
about?
Is a this, bad motherfucker
this
right
why
here.
Helps me not have to depend on somebody else telling me who I'm going to be, how far
there
I'm going to get. And there's beauty in this why. It's like control your own destiny in this why.
There's no more excuses.
There's no more excuses in this why.
I don't give a fuck whether you live in Metuchen, New Jersey, or fucking Iowa. You want to do something now on this whole thing. You want to show me what you got. It's a you know what? If you got an iPhone now, you can go on Periscope and show me what you got.
Yeah.
It's that simple. And if you're that good, you'll shine through.
Yeah.
It's that fucking simple. You could go into training now at the age of 9. You could do a show in your fucking bedroom if you're 9. Look at Cassius Morris.
Yeah, I was going to say.
In 5 years, Cassius Morris is going to be fucking Johnny Carson, you know.
But it adds a lot of pressure, though.
What's the pressure?
That now you don't have an excuse. A lot of people
you
like
don't
make
have
excuses.
An excuse. Yeah, you don't have an excuse.
Yeah, but the cream rises to the crop. But whoever was making excuses, then see you later. And then the people that don't care about excuses, they're about going out there and getting it, they'll get it. The only thing is sometimes some people have more balls than talent. But I can't get mad at somebody with more balls than talent. At least they're using their balls.
That's how I look at it, that it's all mixed in some way or another. You know, you say whatever you want to say. This kid made $1,000 million. What's the... You can't touch this. What's his name?
Hammer?
Yeah, that motherfucker used to sell albums in front of the comedy store.
Yeah,
the people coming out of the comedy store.
No way.
Chewy will tell you. Those door people tell you the stories. They still remember him. You know, he was a bat boy for fucking the Oakland A's.
Yeah.
You know, this. Sometimes you hear these stories, and this is what it... Ali... Where the fuck were we? We were talking about the desire. Ian, tell Lee about the desire to be good at stand-up. What goes through your heart? What goes through your soul when you sign your name and you're last on the fucking list and you see a dude up on stage that's killing him at the end of your fucking open mic thing and you're funnier than he is? But you can't tell him what to desire. How many times do you want to go on stage? What do you think about all day? Do you think about anything else when you want to fucking be good at comedy?
It's like... There's something like you're in a job where you have to kind of prove yourself every time you get on stage, and you have to accept that this is what I do. I got to prove myself, and the desire to, like, this is a funny thing where if you don't do as much as you can, somebody will catch you from behind, and if you don't do as much as you can, you'll never catch the people ahead of you, and so you just always have to stay on your toes and keep working and keep grinding, keep writing and trying to figure out ways how to gain inches on the person in front of you and on the person behind you. But you have to love to want to do that. You know, you got to love to want to accomplish something. Then it's for you. Then it's easier. You know what I mean? Like, I always want to be funny. Like, I like hanging around with young comics. I think more... Then it's like some older comics, they get like bitter, or they just get tired and wear down. Like, young comics inspire me. Like, oh, these people are hungry and they look up to me, so I don't want them to never not look up to me, like the way I'm not looking up to this older guy who's just like just mailing it in. So I just want, I don't know, I think right now, because I'm not where I want to be, I'm still hungry, but I hope when I get to where I want to be, that I stay hungry as I am now. What I love about where I'm at now is the fact that I'm still hungry. And like that itself is a gift that I enjoy.
I'm hungry in a motherfucker.
You know? Yeah.
Always.
Yeah. Always. That's why I love you.
These, like, wheels are always fucking turning.
Yeah.
If I have an idea for somebody, I'll pass on the karma. Hey, man, I was watching you on stage the other night. I think you should really fucking jump off a building, whatever the fuck it is that you do. I love watching you. You know, Ever since I went back to the Comedy Store, I was trying to explain to my friend Jody today that your game improves. I've said it on the podcast many times.
Right.
You're at the world's best, at least the top three places to do stand-up comedy. This is it. This is it. You're an Army Ranger.
Right.
You're a Navy SEAL. You're the best of the best, you know, and a couple nights I went there and watched you, and I was blown away by your writing.
Sure. Thanks, man.
Blown away from the abortion joke to No Commitment. You know, you've got three things going on that you have broken the joke down. I would love to aspire to write like somebody like you. It is.
Are you kidding me, Joey Diaz?
Oh my God! And you're smooth. You're smooth, which I really like. I like people that come around the back door and make you think, but fuck your world up. You make them think and fuck their world up. I come at you. Joe Rogan comes at you. It's a no-brainer. It's a different type of energy. Your energy is very. It's jazz. It's jazz. It's, and you know what? It's Jamaican jazz, which doesn't exist. It's you. The smoothness in your voice and how your tones and you stop, that's the gift.
Right.
That's the gift that people don't know. The power of the voice and stand-up is what don't hit you till about the 12th year.
Right.
When you realize how powerful your voice is. When I whisper, yo, don't listen to me. And then when I get loud, it's too, that the power of the mind. And I know it. I don't know how to teach it to you. If you came to me, Lee, and said, dog, I want to be the best stand-up. I was watching the other night and what you do with your voice controls the game. That's why they give you the microphone. That's why I fuck up and walk away from the microphone. When you walk away from the microphone, you lose your power. That power is, but your voice and comedy and your thing. Like when I close my eyes, it's like Julius Erving. The rhythm is in the.
Damn, I'll take that.
Yeah, you're the smoothness. And I've never heard that type of smoothness.
Damn.
There's a guy that has that smoothness, but it's a complete different smoothness, and that's Dave Chappelle.
Right, right.
It's a complete different smoothness. You took it somewhere else. So it's really, that's what I see, man.
Oh, thanks, man.
In my comedy world, I like, bro, I'm a student of the game.
Right.
I want to see what makes you tick, and I want to see why they're laughing.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I want to see why they're laughing. Let's see why they're fucking really laughing. Are they his words? If people knew that your words don't even matter.
Right.
If people knew at home, it's like when people say, I love intelligent comedy and thoughtful. I like in comedy what they say that incites my brain. Go suck a dick that smells like ass. That'll make you fucking think. All right? You know what I'm saying? That'll make you think.
Go suck a dick that smells like ass.
Yeah, why is this guy's dick smells like ass as you're sucking it? That's a $54,000 question right there. But it's, I love stand up, man. I've always loved it. And the more I do it, the more respect I have for it.
Right.
I have a ton of respect for it. I've never run a light. I've never disrespected a comic like that. I have a ton of respect for it because it took me out of a dark place. It took me out of a gutter. I respect it. I respect it like a fucking lion. I respect that Comedy Store stage. I know what's happened to me. You know, I never went to Juilliard.
Right.
I ain't no fucking, who's the big black dude?
Vin Rames.
I didn't go to Juilliard. That motherfucker went to Juilliard. I didn't go to Juilliard. I didn't take no acting classes when I was in New York. You know what? Acting was fucking fronting drugs.
Your life.
That's your life. Acting is when you go up to people and say, dog, lend me 20. I'll bring back in an hour. I got this chick that's coming. This dude, I sold him an encyclopedia and they give me the 20. That's acting. And there you are in a fucking room with, you know, the director from Drugstore Cowboy and John Travolta's in the room. And they, I thought about that today because Battlestar Galactica was, what's that movie Travolta made about the Scientologist?
Battle Earth. Something like that.
I was, bro, me and Billy Gardell were about to get hired to be Travolta's sidekicks in a movie about a singer from Hoboken, New Jersey that disrespected Sinatra. True story. Jimmy Roselli disrespected Frank Sinatra, didn't sing at his mother. Jimmy Roselli was petrified of Sinatra. Sinatra was petrified of Roselli. He had a better voice than Sinatra. And his mother would always talk about Jimmy Roselli. You got to be more like Jimmy Roselli. So when Sinatra busted out, he hired Jimmy Roselli to sing at his mother's thing, and he never showed up.
Oh,
so he said, really? I'm cutting you off. He cut him off so bad that Jimmy Roselli, used to sell albums from the trunk of his car in Hoboken, New Jersey.
Damn.
And the Italians would go, Jimmy, close the trunk. You're embarrassing us. So we had that fucking movie. And I'll never forget, dog. I went to the Comedy Store on a Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And got fucked up. Blow and the whole fucking thing, eating somebody's ass like till 3 in the morning.
Just a normal Tuesday.
And this, and I had a callback for this. Now, I had gone over it. I knew it. But that fucking cocaine and all that party and threw the shit off. And I went in there Monday at 10 o'clock. And I thought it was going to be me and who directed Cocaine Cowboy, you know?
Van Zandt. The documentary?
No, the movie.
The movie?
With Matt Dillon, Van Zandt. Badass motherfucker. He did something after that. It wasn't bad. I thought it was just going to be Gus Van Zandt. Fuck no. It was Travolta.
Oh, shit.
At 10:15.
Oh, shit. After the night you had.
After the night I got, Travolta got to show up in this bitch. And I remember I had to go in there first, and he was great, and I did great. And they called my agent, and they said, what? We got a pin in him. And 2 days later, my agent goes, you got a spot tonight somewhere? They want to come see you. Gus Van Zandt and the casting director.
Mm-hmm.
I said, yeah, at the Comedy Store. And they fucking showed up. Gus Van Sant shook my hand. He said, listen, I'll be seeing you soon. And I'm in Miami doing the improv, feeling good about myself. I'm about to do a Travolta movie. And my fucking manager calls me. He goes, dog, he took Battlefield Galactico over fucking some Scientology movie over your movie. It's over. It got written. The script is done. Nothing. They never did it again.
I mean, he had to take that movie. He had to take Battlefield Earth.
Yeah, they showed him pictures of him playing with little fucking Asian boys. Playing soccer with little Asian boys with fucking thongs on.
They know all his secrets. They recorded them. Yeah, he had to take it.
Who would tell somebody? That's how they got...
You seen the Scientology documentary?
I'll tell you what. This is how they come to you, though. You don't tell them shit at first.
Mm-hmm.
They come to you. Once you're sucking some dude's dick, he's going to take out like a little iPhone and go, somebody wants to talk to you on Periscope. And it's that old dude, L. Ron Hubbard, going, listen, we got you. We got cameras all over that room. We got a dildo up your ass. That's going to be fucked up when we show the pictures to Welcome Back Carter. you better be up at 444 Los Feliz tomorrow. Bring an envelope and bring a notebook. Remember, he took the courses. Did you see that? They talked about him. He took the courses. He was in.
You know what's funny about that documentary? Like, the first two courses in Scientology are actually legit. Like, if you break it down, it's like any religion. Like, every religion has, like, roots of truth. And then after that, they just make shit up. And to me, when I was watching the Scientology, I said, this could have actually been a decent, honest religion. But then they started making up levels so that you can pay more money to get to those levels. And it was a point of, like, pride and esteem for people to get to those levels. And then you get to the briefcase level where they just open this briefcase and they tell you this crazy ass story that couldn't be true. And you were worse off at that level than you were in level one and level two if you'd have just tapped out right then and there. But they just made this shit up for money. But the first two things, it has to be believable enough to get you in. And you're like, every time you're going up, you're like, but the first two levels were legit, so the rest of the shit, even though it feels hokey, it should be all right. And the same thing Christianity does, or just most religions. It's like, you know, the first few things, like, this is solid. Then it gets you keep going up. It's that's when shit gets crazy. But you believe them because of the first two.
Have you guys ever got tested? I've been here 4.5 years, and I just, like, 2 weeks ago
got tested.
No, I didn't get tested. Someone asked me on the street if I wanted to.
And you kept walking, I hope.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, I'd never do it.
It's like Santeria. One minute you're throwing some cards, the next minute you're up in the Bronx naked, getting water poured on you by three black dudes playing a conga drum and shit.
First two levels of Santa Maria.
Santeria
is good.
Oh, that's right. We got to do a little fucking Tony Bennett. Break it up a little bit and shit. We do this every Monday out of respect.
All right.
I want to be around to pick up the pieces.
This is a badass jam, bro.
Yeah. When somebody breaks
I like this
your
dude.
Heart. Somebody
I like Tony Bennett because he never panicked. You know what I mean? His whole career, he's never panicked.
He just got older and older.
Yeah, I'm just going to keep doing this.
He's getting fucking paid.
Yeah.
He's like 100. Do me a favor. Play the beginning of I Left My Heart in San Francisco. Doug, this song, I play this every Monday, Monday morning as I'm getting ready. And sometimes I'm doing shit and the next song falls in because it's the greatest hits album. And it's a, I Left My Heart in San Francisco. You gotta hear the first fucking verse of this.
Oh, right.
He knocks it out of the park, Doug. Knocks it out of the park.
The loveliness of Paris seems somehow too much.
Sorry.
That was
wrong. Sorry.
The loveliness of Paris.
Don't touch nothing, cocksucker.
Seems somehow sadly gay. The glory that was Rome is of another day. I've been terribly alone.
I'm fine.
And
good.
Forgotten in Manhattan.
I'll bite that fucking finger.
I'm going home to my city by the bay. I left my heart.
That's a bad dude, dog.
Yeah. He's a gangster.
In San Francisco.
That's a bad motherfucker right there. That guy takes it to the next level for a white dude.
That's hilarious.
He's fucking singing songs of Lady Gaga. Who's uglier? You ever see them two standing together? Who the fuck wins that ugly contest?
It's fucked up. It's hilarious.
They both got hooked noses. You know, you break out a Coke rocker on those two vacuums to see what happens.
Yeah, it looked like she got on a Tony Bennett costume. Like, who's who?
Oh, my God.
But I like him, man, because he stuck around. He's like, he had to weather out Sinatra and just everybody else, music changing. And he's like, I'm just going to keep doing this shit. I'm never
he
keep
did.
This tuxedo.
He
did and then he kind of won. He went through a lot. He weathered a lot of music genres, changes, bigger stars than him, but this motherfucker kind of won.
And then he started singing duets with Bono. And
yeah.
He just started doing fucking duets with people. It's now you really got to hand it to him.
Yeah.
Some people just weather it the fuck out.
Yeah, how many times have you been like, this Tony Bennett thing's going to go away? And it's a decade after decade after decade, and you're like, Tony
you
Bennett's household.
You know why? Because he stays out there.
Yeah.
Even if he ain't singing, you know, he stays out there.
Yeah.
He's probably out there 3 weekends a month.
Yeah.
Probably has it down. One show, you know, $52 a ticket. He sings for 45 minutes. He gets the fuck out of there.
Yeah.
And he goes back to his hotel room. And he goes to sleep. And he takes care of himself. He probably has a train and he eats well.
He's like,
you know, those guys, how old is Tony Bennett? Let's see how old that motherfucker is. And let's see where he is this weekend.
He's like, when Frank Sinatra dies, they're going to need someone to sing old music. And I'm just going to be alive, and I'm going to be the dude. And he made it. This motherfucker's amazing.
All right, so he was born in 26.
So he's 74 there. 74 and 15 is what?
89. He's about to turn 90. He's about to turn 89
and
in
when,
August.
When is he traveling? Where is he this weekend?
Let's see.
He's fucking always somewhere, dog. I guarantee he's some fucking casino jumping up and down this week.
Oh, shit. He's in London.
Told you.
He's in London with Lady Gaga.
Oh, shit.
And then he's going to Atlantis with Lady Gaga, New York, at Radio City Music Hall.
Do they have an album together or some shit?
I think they were in Vegas. Wasn't Token there saying they're in Vegas together?
I knew they did a song, but they have an album together?
Yeah.
Something.
I don't know. They're going all over the country. Monte Carlo.
Fucking 90. Fucking 90.
Belgium, Italy.
And he's in London tonight doing a show, The Flight. Somebody said they bumped into him in LAX. Somebody saw him. Mm-hmm. Some friend of mine said, Doug, I saw Tony Bennett. It looked like $1 million.
Oh, right.
Doug, that's what it is. Those guys. You know who else would have been cleaning up? Not Cosby. Cosby was doing shows with 100 a ticket.
I went to see him.
He went to see him. He was cleaning up. And how long does he do? He sits the whole time?
He did like a while. I went to like the taping of his special. He did like almost, I think, 2 hours, 2.5 hours.
How was that special?
The one I saw was great. The one they put out sucked. He did 2 hours. They had to condense it. But,
I blew it. I wanted to see him, and some of my friends went to see him, and then I said, I'll get a chance to see him, and then the scandal dropped.
He's still doing some gigs, though.
Yeah. I should look it up and go see him before Before you got no more shows.
Before somebody gives him one of those Cosby pills and shit.
Yeah, before, yeah. It's hilarious. That's what they should change it to. Oh, the Cosby pill?
Oh, my God. I've gotten women fucked up, but I've never given them a Cosby pill. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't have the Cosby balls to pill. Do that. Because they're going to know when they wake up in the morning.
Right, right.
And you're going to fuck them, and they're going to feel their pussies fucked up. You know, what are you going to do? Mm-hmm. Just, what happened? I don't know. My pussy hurts. I got a fucked up thing in my eye. You know, what happened last night? Because I used to do creepy shit. I'm coming to ham when they're sleeping and shit. I'll do creepy shit, dog. Once I bang them, and then like my dick would get hard, like an hour later, they'd be passed out.
Right.
I go back in that room and like open up their legs and look at their little monkey again and try to bang one out and shit. I'm fucking fucked up. You know?
I thought it would be like on CNN, like another Joey Diaz accuser.
There's no Joey Diaz accusers. I'm just saying that fucking it's true. We get hard, but I could never give somebody. I remember when the roofies were big.
Right.
I used to hang out with a girl that liked taking them.
Like, oh, for real?
We'd split one. In Boulder.
Damn.
That's fucking crazy. But I've never put in some chick's drink. I'd be fucking embarrassed. That's not my game. I would never poison somebody like that. I don't mind poisoning Lee, giving him edibles and lying to him and shit.
No, we all know you don't mind doing that.
And I don't think Lee would mind it either.
I could take a break. Wouldn't be that bad.
I don't know, man. I've known you for a while, but I didn't go to the store, so I didn't see you as much.
Right, yeah. You stopped coming through, then I didn't see you. And then, but, you know, after the changes, you know, the Tommy out thing, and you and Rogan came back, and it just breathed, like, fresh air into the store, man.
It's a great place.
It's a great place now. Like, some of that darkness that it had more darkness, but you need some of the darkness to create the atmosphere that the store is, but some of it is lifted, so it has the right mix of like light and darkness. But the store does need some type of darkness.
The darkness is what pulls the comedy out of you.
Right.
If you let the store get into you like that, late night sets, and you go down there four nights a week, and let me tell you something, it'll pull some shit out of you that you don't know is in there.
Right.
Because this is the way I used it. I had to follow Mooney, so by the time I got up, they had heard everything. They had heard everything, G. So now you got to talk to them about what the fuck was going on. And in that, there's pearls of wisdom.
Right.
They're tough to get to, but it's a different angle. I love being under pressure with 200 eyeballs on me.
Damn.
That's my world. That's when I can really kick it in, especially if I smoke a little bit and I'm just kicking back in that stance. It's going to be a fucking long night for you. But the store taught me that.
Right.
The darkness of the store. Listen, it don't. No regular people become comedians.
Right.
No regular people become from comedians. If you come from a normal fucking childhood, you don't become a comedian. Somewhere along the line, something stung you, and you're trying to work it out. You don't even know it's stinging.
Right.
That's the weird thing about comedy. You don't even know. You know. And there you are. For me, I don't know what the fuck it was. You said you made up your mind. You didn't want a fucking day job. I'll tell you what, neither did I.
Right.
And this was, and I'm telling you honest, this was the path of least resistance at that time.
Right, right, right.
When I was 31 years old. This was it. I had nothing. I had nothing at that time. I got divorced. I blew all my credit cards. You know, there was no more. Nobody would front me no more pills. There was no coke dealers left. I couldn't rob nobody. They blame it on me.
You'd robbed everybody. There's no one left to rob.
There was no drug dealers left to rob in Boulder. And I had to do something. And I knew that if I stuck to something, because the plan was, Ian, if this didn't work out, the next level, I was just going to get a kilo of coke and two guns and let's play it out till the end of time to see what happens.
Blaze of glory.
Whether the fucking blow kills me or somebody shoots me, let's see what happens. And I'm really fucking happy that the comedy saved me, you know. So when I got into it, I put a heavy commitment into this. It's like you've been doing it 23, 24 years like me. 24 years. At the 8-year mark, you're in.
Right.
You ever see people in L.A. when you got here, and all of a sudden you forget about those motherfuckers, and you see them on Facebook, and you see what the fuck they're doing now?
Yeah.
And you sit there, like, and you go, I went to an acting class with this motherfucker, Rob. I went to a meeting. This guy was up for a show with me. He quit.
It feels like you're looking at somebody's funeral. They're alive, but they're not doing what you met them doing, and you feel sad that they didn't continue. And it's almost like I remember, this is another Hugh story. I was like, hey, man, Teddy's moving back to New York. And he's like, Teddy's moving back to New York. And he said it like Teddy died. I said, no, he's still alive. But you're right. That nigga's moving back to New York. He's dead. And that's how I look at it when I in that vein that you just mentioned.
I look at it that commitment you told me you were in was all fake. You were confused. You came to LA. Right, right. You went to Montreal. You got the deal. You were at the store. You were at the improv. You got a manager. And then one day, out of the fucking clear blue sky, I don't see you no more.
Right.
I don't know what happened. And then 3 years later, Facebook comes along with Twitter. And there you are on Facebook talking to Lee. And I look at your page and I see a kid or whatever. And I see that you're at a bowling league now. I'm not mad at you. And by no means. I don't even think you're dead. I don't even look at it that way. For you to get, and I know they all miss it. Like Mike Ricker misses it.
Right, and Mike left.
All his homies miss it.
Yeah.
But I don't understand how you came out here and had this commitment. We did all these things. You were at the Laugh Factory with me. We did all these things. And one day you just stopped.
Mm-hmm.
I never understood that. Yeah. I never understood that.
I can't get that, and I hope I never get that. You know, like... I never want to understand it. I just want to keep pushing forward and just keep this energy that I got to just keep going forward.
Well, no, listen, you're a special fucking gem. You're already there.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know that jar that nobody could open?
Mm-hmm.
And then your mother comes along with a missing finger and opens that motherfucker? That's all that's right at the point where you're at right now. You and I both know this.
Mm-hmm.
You're talented. It's your time. You just need a little push over. You can never listen, man. This is gonna taste better for you. You didn't come here. You wanted a flash. How many flash in the pans you know out here?
A lot.
How many? How many people got a big deal in Montreal and they started cutting motherfuckers at the store, bumping bitches at the store, and now you see them and they can't even make look at you. Look at that thing I read 5 weeks ago about Vinny Favorito. Weren't we at the store, Vinny Favorito? Weren't you at the store?
I know that name. Who the fuck is that?
The dude who robbed everybody in Vegas. He took loans. Italian dude.
He's a comic, right?
That dude came out here with a blaze of glory.
Right.
I mean, he shot every motherfucker. He went to the store, bam. Went to James Masada, bang.
Mm-hmm.
Went to the improv. Not only did the improv put him up, but fucking what's his name started taking him on tour with him. The old man.
Who that?
You know, fucking Bud Friedman. Started putting him everywhere. Oh, the kid was went to Montreal, didn't get a deal, but came back. Somebody gave him a TV show. He took the magician in with him, and all of a sudden, shit started spilling out from everywhere that this guy had fucking done an open mic class in Boston, took everybody's money and left.
Oh, shit.
He's one of those type of gangsters. Then he disappeared from here. Then people are like, no, he's in Vegas. He's doing fucking great. And I'm sitting there going, this dude had a really bad gambling problem.
Right, right.
And now he goes to Vegas.
Where?
And it just disappeared. And I'm not the type of guy who's going to put him down. Mm-hmm. You just give like that a guy like that rope.
Right.
Because it's like me going to Miami in 95. I would have been dead right now.
Right, right.
You don't send Joey Diaz to Miami for no reasons at all in those days. The coke up here is 60. Down there it's $25. You know how many of those I can eat a fucking day? Yeah. You know, it's like they sent Hollywood Henderson to Miami. You're too young for Hollywood Henderson, right? Oh, you remember Hollywood Henderson?
Nah, I don't remember.
Hollywood Henderson was a fucking bad-ass Dallas cowboy.
Uh-huh.
Badass from the sticks of Texas. One of them type of black motherfuckers. I'll give you the article. I'm going to put it in my car.
I bet.
This dude, Sergio Ortega, gave it to me. And he describes his first day at Thousand Oaks. At the training facility right here in California. The Dallas Cowboys do that thing up there. He's like, here I am, a 20-year-old rookie, and all I got is $15, 3 hits of acid, a gram of blow, and a couple of joints. And I'm in a dormitory with a bunch of fucking momos. Something like you're like... And from there on, dog, he talks about going to the Comedy Store and picking up Pryor and the Pointer Sisters and fucking cooking up fucking crack before, you know, Freebase is what they called it.
At 20?
He was, dog, this guy was ripping it up.
He was ahead of his time.
He was ahead of his time. Nobody remembers him no more. Let me tell you an interesting story. He fucking started intercepting motherfuckers, like getting interceptions and scoring.
Mm-hmm.
And then they went to the Super Bowl. And he took a can of Orange Crush. That's what they call the Denver defense. Mm-hmm. And he crushed it on national TV. And then the Super Bowl, he caught an interception and ran it into the Super Bowl. And this motherfucker was King Dick. And if you read like that whole Playboy thing, he talks about having an apartment up here and having three white bitches, having an apartment in Dallas. And that for his 27th birthday, and Tutor Jones gave him four bitches, a redhead, an Asian, four a black bitches. Chick, and a fucking a Martian. And he fucked all four of them. I mean, this guy, I mean, you're sitting there going, holy fuck. And they starts talking about fucking carrying pistols and being up here, and he just went AWOL. So after he wins the Super Bowl, they all know he's crazy. And if they show old footage of Dallas, it's really interesting to see him, because in the locker room after they won that Super Bowl, mm-hmm. you could see him in the back with no shirt on going, party. Like, he was just out there, dog. Right. He was 20 years ahead of his time. And then in a game on CBS, he fucking, they were losing, mm-hmm. and the camera went to him, and he went like this. We're number one, motherfucker, something. Mm-hmm. Next day, Tom Landry cut his ass.
Oh, right.
And where did they send him? Miami.
And shit.
And he just went AWOL and got guns. But he got locked up, went to jail, came out, became a born-again Christian. And about 6 years ago, he won $1 million in the Texas lottery.
Oh, for real?
Yeah,
Jesus, you know, he's born lucky.
There you go and shit.
Was he on the team that won 16-0?
The Dallas? No, that's Miami Dolphins.
That's what I meant, because you said he went to Miami.
He went to He went to Miami like in 77, and it was way after that. No, this happened like in 75, 76. You gotta get your shit together. You're a lot younger. You're a young man. You don't remember these things and shit.
It might not even be an age thing. Like, I was in Jamaica probably when that shit was happening. So I came.
No CBS here. Sports in Jamaica.
Yeah, yeah. So for some reason they didn't have American football in Jamaica. So, you know.
How many years were you in Jamaica? 9 to.
To 17.
Went to high school down there?
Yeah, I went to high school down there.
And you were smoking ganja and all that shit?
Yeah, we had a soccer field in my neighborhood, and then there's a play with like the older dudes, and then there was in Jamaica, when people start building a house, it could take 20 years to finish building the house. So then there's this house across the field, across the street from the soccer field, that it wasn't abandoned, it's just that they had the whole frame up, all the blocks, but it had no windows. Some of it didn't have no roof. Like, somebody was, like, building it slowly, sending money down, and, like, building it brick by brick. So it was, like, kind of like a clubhouse with no floor. And we just hang out over there. Like, I remember one day it was raining, and I went to the soccer field to see if they was playing. And I look at the house, and there's smoke coming from out the house. And walk over there, all the older soccer dudes were there. And he's passing joints around, smoke with them and shit, and do stuff like that.
Let me ask you something. You know, what's the religion Bob Marley did?
Rastafarian.
And who's their god?
They believe, like, Haile Selassie was the second coming of Christ.
But when he sings that song, Exodus,
mm-hmm.
who's he saying in the beginning?
They believe in the Bible, but they believe that Haile Selassie is the second coming of Christ. So they believe in the Old Testament, and so they're kind of Christian. I don't want to, like, say, but there's a lot of shit from the Bible that they believe. And then they also believe about, you know, that corporate people and a lot white people did a lot of fucked up shit, and it was about, and they believe in Haile Selassie because there was a picture of him and his foot. Ethiopia was at war with Italy, and they beat Italy, and there's a picture of him, Haile Selassie, with his foot on this bomb that didn't explode, like a missile or some shit, and it just was like, oh shit, this motherfucker's God, you know, and he just became basically Rastafarian's God, Rastafarian's Jesus Christ. And I think I'm accurate, but, you know, you could check it. But, and, you know, it was about just being healthy and being spiritual and living good and not hurting people. And
smoking dope.
And smoking, you know. That's just it. To get in contact, you know, spiritual. The spiritual thing, get in contact with your higher consciousness and not fucking people over and growing your hair like Mama tribe style, you know.
No shit.
And being fearless, yeah.
So you're 17, you end up in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
Who's up there?
My mother's there, and we all came up, me, my father, my two sisters, and my brother. and finished high school in Uniondale High School in Long Island. Went there and
by the Coliseum.
Near the Coliseum, yeah. And I was just like, there's a bunch of Jamaicans there. Hung out with them because I identified with them. And but they was making fun of the Yankee kids. Like dominated the school. Yankees, like any American black kid, we call them Yankees. They call us Yardies, and we fight every day. And if a Jamaican person got into a fight, you was in a fight. And I was like, why y'all starting these fights? These niggas outnumber us. We in America. Like, why? Like, are we bad at math? Like, we're not gonna win this fight after school. There's 10 Yardies, 200 Yankees. Stop starting these fights. But you gotta go fight, or else then you got no friends. It's like being in jail. It's like, if you don't fight with your people, then you ain't got no people. So you either don't fight.
Or switch.
Or switch. I can't switch. My accent was thick. they're like, nigga, you was Jamaican yesterday. There's no way you ain't Jamaican now. We can hear it. So it's just like, fuck it. But, you know, we had fun. And, you know, we just got along and just started knowing people and spreading. Had a little job at Burger King, making some. First, I started cutting lawns, had my own business, and then got a little job at Burger King and worked there for a long time, stayed there too long. And, like, through college and shit, and I had security guard jobs and shit like that. And it was one day when I was at Burger King, some dude was on the drive-thru. Like, so then I had a problem, not a problem, but learning how to communicate with people. Like, the way I'm talking to you now, like, I had to learn this. Like, I'd been in, like, when I was a kid in England, that was my comfort zone. I was from 0 to 9, all I knew was English, you know what I'm saying? Like, hanging around English people, and a lot of those English people were my cousins, they were Jamaican, it was a mixed society, and you know how to communicate and talk with them. Like, they only had whatever radio stations they had, everybody listened to it. You know, whatever sports they were, everybody followed it. So then it was easy to communicate with people. Then when you moved to Jamaica, or when we moved to Jamaica, I knew a lot about Jamaica because in England, our parents taught us that. So and England used to be a colony of England, so we had a lot of things in common. So then when I was in Jamaica, I could easily relate. Plus, I was interesting because I'm a nigga from England in Jamaica, so people want to talk to you. You know what I'm saying? But then when you're Jamaican and you come to America and you're like, it's kind of intimidating because it's all the shit you've seen on TV, and now you're here in this big-ass pot. And it's like in Jamaica, you could feel the side of the pool. In America, there is no side of the pool. You're just in the middle of it. And you're like, you got to navigate your way around this shit. So that's when I started rooting for the Giants. Like, I learned that people talk sports and music. And sports music. And there was a guy there. His name was Greg Ellis. He was funny as shit. He was a singer. And he was funny as shit. And everybody loved hanging around Greg and working on his shift at Burger King. Like, this thing would just have you laughing, clowning people. And I enjoyed hanging out with him. And I was like, oh, that's what you do. You just get funny. You tap into your funny side. And, you know, I was so just socially lost. I forgot that, you know, something that I was doing naturally in Jamaica. You know, when you're trying to find your center in a new place, you forget until it hits you. It's like, oh, the shit you was doing in Jamaica, nigga. Just being a person and being funny. And have some context on how to be funny, like no sports, no music, and because you feel behind, like the things that everybody knows out here, you don't know, you know. So you feel behind. So you're doing a lot of catching up, and you're pretending to know shit you don't know too, you know, just so you can like
fit in.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
It's
all that shit going on.
Oh my God, you just took me back. Because for me, it mm-hmm. wasn't as much as the English. It was, I mean, since day one. Like, I remember waking up and if you ask me when did this all start, it started 127th Street.
Mm-hmm.
And there, I learned how to, I didn't know black and white. I just knew friends. mm-hmm. where I lived on 88th Street, those kids didn't talk to me because my mom would talk to me in Spanish.
Right.
So they wouldn't talk to me. I don't know why. But after hanging out with Jasper and that whole scene, when I went back to 88th Street, mm-hmm. and once I got to that school, I was always very timid and quiet. I felt socially unacceptable.
Right.
I was Cuban. I wasn't as good as the white kids. Right. You know, you don't know how to fit in. You're trying to find it. And then who saved me was my mom. In the kindergarten on my birthday, that bitch brought a Carvel cake and a case of Coca-Cola in cans. Them motherfuckers loved me after that. They knew I didn't fuck around.
Hello.
And I got myself a little piece-ass little Chinese girl after that. And I started going to her house. I ain't fucking with you. Her that's father hilarious. Used to draw for Charles Schulz.
Oh, so shit.
We'd get the first screenings of fucking any peanut movies.
Damn.
She'd take me and we'd eat Chinese gum with the wrapper.
Chinese gum.
Candy with the wrapper. And we'd watch. And I'd go to her house. And then something happened. And at that time, I was a decent kid. I was very quiet. I was very timid.
Mm-hmm.
The Green Hornet came along. And I'm watching this Chinese motherfucker bitch slap people, right? And I'm like, I like this, but I can never do this.
Mm-hmm.
This is not my world. I could never see myself lifting up my hand to another child. My mom was an antagonizer.
Mm-hmm.
My mom always wanted me to protect myself.
Right.
And I go, Mom, I don't want to hit him. My mom would take me home and go, next time that kid pushes, you got to punch him in the fucking face. And my mom would have hand signals, and sometimes I'd do it, sometimes I wouldn't when I was in the park. But I got hit in the head with a flashlight.
Oh, shit.
At Central Park. Somebody hit me, took my, not a flashlight, a lunchbox.
Right.
The container, and they hit me. And that changed my game, because I didn't like that feeling of getting beaten the fuck up. Now right. I get it why my mom's saying, you got to slip and bitch slap a motherfucker. But it was too late, I got the stitches. So after that, my hook was being crazy. So if you jumped off the third floor, I jumped off the fifth floor.
Right.
If you fought two guys, I fought three guys. If you hit them with one egg, I hit them with three eggs.
Right.
I was one of those motherfuckers. And then I went up to 148th Street. And that's the melting pot.
Mm-hmm.
I was black, Puerto Rican, Irish, a couple Jews, a couple Germans. Everybody got along. It's like Do the Right Thing.
Mm-hmm.
Do the Right Thing is a beautiful movie
mm-hmm.
because it's about people just talking out loud. But deep down inside, we all get along with one another. We have to communicate with one another every fucking day. I got to go to your Korean store.
Mm-hmm.
You got to walk by me to get fucking shoes. You know, there's interaction. No, there's
right.
interaction that you don't know about. Even though I'm sitting on the corner going, those fucking Puerto Ricans, those fucking niggas.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, I'm at the corner with him, hugging him, giving him a dollar so he'd get a bottle.
Right.
Because that's how I roll. But you follow me? If they get along, you just get along. And that's where I got that little melting pot is where I just got hit. Like, I knew that you had to back your friends.
Right.
You know, if you want to be fucking whatever, if somebody's fucking with Lee and I'm there, and there's eight motherfuckers, you want people to not fuck with you, jump in for Lee and bitch slap him. That's it.
Right.
You're the leader of this crew now. You're giving orders. You're hanging out with the other leaders and shit. So that's the way I knew. I never knew it was about being funny.
Right.
I never had an idea. That came in later on at
right.
13, The Odd Couple.
But being, like, jumping from the fourth window, when somebody jumps from the third, that shit is funny. Like, you're doing a lot of funny shit, but you don't know how much you're entertaining people. You know, you're entertaining people more than scaring the shit out of them. You know what I'm saying? Like, this like, you're the, you know, you were the crazy, funny motherfucker. You know, but you're identifying with the crazy part, but people are like, this motherfucker is entertaining. I like to hang around this motherfucker. He's amazing.
Do you remember the 45 singles?
Yeah, the records? Yeah,
the
yeah,
the records,
yeah.
Okay. My mom had a jukebox at the bar.
Uh-huh.
So when the 45 singles were done, she'd keep them in a box. When I went to her record shop, I'd take the 45 singles
mm-hmm.
and put them in a bag and take them home. She'd go, what are you going to do? I'm going to listen to them. I want to listen to them. I go to my back window, and there'd be people out there walking.
Oh, shit.
There was a parking garage back there, and I whipped those things out of there and hit motherfuckers in the head.
That's hilarious.
And for months, nobody knew who it was. I would go out there and the kids would be saying, yeah, man, somebody's whipping fucking records at motherfuckers out there. He cut this guy, he hit this guy in the head, he hit this guy's dog. And finally, one day I told like these three little gangsters, I go, if I tell you a secret, you won't say nothing. I'm like, I'm the motherfucker that's been launching those 45s out the window. They're like, come on. No. And I go, come upstairs. I had boxes of them.
Oh, shit.
These motherfuckers went nuts. I gave them like a ham and cheese sandwich. I let them up there throwing those things out the window for like an hour. Oh my God.
You were a terror.
That shit is crazy, but it's fun. You know what I'm saying? like throwing records and eating ham and cheese sandwiches.
Oh my God!
For an hour?
Oh, these little Puerto Rican kids.
Where are you gonna find fun like that?
No, that was my whole thing. I wasn't one of these okay. I wasn't a bad kid.
Mm-hmm.
I just loved to rock.
Right.
Like at that age, even at that age with the broken English, uh-huh. I was a professional. In New York City, they had trees,
uh-huh.
but in the spring, they would come with these fucking dirt balls.
Mm-hmm.
They were these little fertilizer fucking Arab balls. That's how they built the World Trade Center, with these little things, and they were like man-made dirt, and they put it around the tree.
Mm-hmm.
And then it would, after the rain, it would sink in and break in. Right. Those things, when they hit you, they would hit you. They hurt a little bit, but they blow up. So you'd have dust all over you and shit, right? Dog, I would launch those little fucking things. I hit a motherfucker in Puerto Rico with an ice cube.
You should have been a pitcher.
Oh, my God. From the 8th floor at the hotel. I took a
fuck. Snipe people?
Dog, from the 8th floor in a Puerto Rican hotel with my family. I went upstairs, and I started throwing ice cubes off the roof, and some dude was walking. And that ice cube caught momentum, and I knocked that motherfucker out. And they were looking to see who was doing it, and they knocked on my door. And they knew from the look on my face I was guilty as hell. I didn't have to say nothing.
That's hilarious.
You said something to me the other day. You said, like, you're going to be, like, Hummer's going to come back at you with mercy. Like,
I know for a fact. My daughter, I know for a fact. I was from 4 to 7, man. I was brutal after my dad died.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you lose your dad, you got no control. My mom didn't know what to do. My mom was crazy, so she gave it back to me. Right. I would have overpowered a regular woman.
Right, right.
At that age. It was just a horror show what I did to my mom. And I wasn't a bad kid. I just missed my dad.
Right.
Once she remarried, that calmed me down.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
Did you accept that dude right away?
Yes, I did. It was the weirdest thing because I yearned for a man in my life. You know, I was always around women and shit. Mm-hmm. I liked it, but... After a while, I'm smelling perfume and people kissing me. I got lipstick on. They comb in my fucking hair. I want to learn how to sling dick, Jack. So now you're in Jamaica and whatever.
You mentioned something about the 45 records, like in Jamaica. So we used to live in this place called Church Pen, and there's this town called Old Harbor. It's like a 1 mile walk. And my father worked at the end of Old Harbor at this soybean factory. Like, he was an engineer over there. And at night, my sisters used to cook. And then one of us had to take him the food for dinner. And so it was my turn. And you give us bus fare. But if you walk the mile and walk the mile back, you get to keep the bus fare.
Sure.
And then there was this record that was hot on the radio at the time, this reggae record and shit. So I said, I'm going to walk there and back. Buy the record and walk back, and then we get home. My father's gonna be at work. Me and my brothers is gonna just play this shit all night. So then I get to Old Harbor, walk, give him the food, say goodbye, stop at the radio, the record stop, get the 45. I'm running home, not paying attention. All I'm thinking about this, and somebody had dug up the fire hydrant that was on the sidewalk. And they left a hole that was filled with water.
Oh, no.
And I fell, like a kid, fell in the middle of the night. And we don't have street lights. So I'm like, 1 minute I'm running, and the next minute I'm like...
What like Ray Charles' little brother in that tub.
Yeah, I'm like drowning with a record, trying to hold it above the hole so it doesn't... And I had to climb out that fucking muddy hole. And then make it the rest of the way home. And they're like, "What the fuck happened to you?" I don't know. Just put this record on, and we just played that shit all night. Just shit like that.
It's a crazy fucking world.
Jamaica.
What club did you go up first time?
First time was I worked in East Meadow at Burger King. So the club, the guy said,
"Hold
that
on,
thing
Chuckles."
No, it was Chuckles. I did Chuckles too. Like, I used to do Chuckles, but Governors was the first one. So I used to go back and forth between East Meadow. Not East Meadow. East Meadow is where Governors at, and Chuckles in, is it Mineola or some shit?
Yeah, Mineola.
Yeah, I think Mineola. Yeah. So I used to do that.
Grandpa's in Staten Island?
I never really fucked with Staten Island like that. I would go to Yonkers, though.
What was in Yonkers?
Shooting Stars or some shit like that was
Black
there.
Black Club, White Club?
White Club. They'd have mics. You know, nights where, you know, it wasn't the weekend, but, you know, like maybe 5 or 10 people would show up in the audience, and we just give them all our bad comedy. just beat them, try to get all the bad shit out of us, you know, try to do good. Some of us would. Some nights you'd be very inconsistent. It was frustrating. And some nights, most nights, first like 3-4 years of comedy, they wouldn't even be crowds sometimes. Sometimes like you wouldn't go on for weeks.
Yeah.
You get to a spot and it's like, no show tonight. You wait around, no show. So you just go eat and talk shit.
Who was around back then? What year was this when you were getting on stage for the first couple of times?
I'm trying to remember who was around. I know I used to go to the comic strip to try to pull the lotto,
numbers, right,
the numbers. And I know so when I'd always get a number, because you know the guy that used to give the numbers out.
And I don't remember him.
It was a guy. He got killed like
Mondays, right? Mondays or something.
You got on a Monday, but you went there the first Friday of every month. They would do the lotto.
You imagine that, Lee?
Right. So if you're a young kid or whatever, and you want to get a spot on that stage for that month, you had to. There's a long line of like bad comics, including me, and you go up to the podium, and they have pieces of paper turned over. Some of them had numbers, some of them didn't. If you got a piece of paper with a number, then they'd give you a spot on one Monday for that month. And I'd go, wait online, and it was a big thing to me. Like the first time I went there, like I wanted to get a number.
How many like numbers did they have?
Not maybe. Maybe like I don't know. I never thought about it. Maybe 13 numbers.
Wow.
For the whole month, you know. And you drive to Manhattan is a big thing, and you want to get on, and then you're online, you're moving up, then it's your turn. And the first time I picked up a piece of paper, it had no number, and I said, fuck, I just came all the way here for nothing. I'm not going to get on. And then I just went back on the back of the line. I was like, I got to try again. And then you get there, now there's only like 3 pieces of paper left. And there was, you didn't get a number when there was more paper. Why the fuck would you get a number now? So then I'm looking at the papers. People are behind me like, nigga, hurry up and not pick a number so we can not pick a number. And then I'm like looking at the thing. There was a piece of paper in the corner. And it's just so funny how big of a decision this was, picking up one of these pieces of paper, because you just needed to get on. And I went for right here, like right at the corner of the podium, and there was a number on it, and I got a spot. And then every time I went to the comic strip to pick a number on the first Friday every month, I would always pick it from that corner, and there was always a number, and I would get a spot. And then I'd see Adam Sandler, Chris Rock come through, or just people you've seen on TV had names, and I'd stay, I'd do my spot. They'd tell me, no, we're not going to make you a regular, but I'd stay in that fishbowl section and just watch like people you've seen on TV. And you're a kid and you're like having the time of your life trying to make it. Like, you at least you can see some end results, and you have friends that you went to high school with, but they're not doing this, what you're doing. They didn't see Adam Sandler that night. They didn't see Chris Rock. They didn't see Seinfeld or whoever came in. They're not living the life you live, and you start separating from them because you actually feel special even though you're broker than them. You know what I mean? You're like your life is never going to be filled with laughter like mine. I can't really fuck with you like that. And then I remember one Friday I went to pick numbers, and I was insecure because I picked like 5 numbers in a row from this corner spot, and I was like, there's nowhere it's going to be here again. I panicked and I grabbed something from the middle. There was no number on it. I was like, fuck, I should have picked from the corner. I got back on the line and I was like praying, please don't let nobody pick a piece of paper from that corner. And I went back and there was enough piece of paper in the corner, and I picked it. There was a number on it, and then from then on, I never didn't pick from the corner.
Fuck no.
I always got on. They never passed it, but I always got on.
I never had the patience to wait on a line like mm-hmm. that. Like, I knew, like, that Laugh Factory shit he puts you through when you first moved.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I did that one time, and I felt so fucking degrading. Like, I was like, if I gotta do that, I ain't doing it.
Right.
I just won't work that fucking club.
That line's a different line. That line's a crazy line. Like, from my memory, the line at the comic strip in New York, those were comics.
Those are comics. You're absolutely correct.
The Laugh Factory line, people got on costumes. People are homeless. People are like got nothing to do with comedy or should have nothing to do with comedy or on that line.
It's like the people who go to the comedy store on Monday nights.
Right.
7 to 10. Half of them have mental illness.
Yeah.
Don't take a fucking genius to know that. You're right. Sitting there going, Joey, you're fucked up too. Yeah, but these people are really fucked
really
up.
Fucked up.
Boom Chakalaka shows up with a fucking a shopping cart.
Yeah.
Know? Jeff Richards puts him in videos. I mean, that crazy bastard. Boom Chakalaka. The other guy who comes late night and he's a Nazi and he goes in the bathroom, they light him on fire. Michael Epavaya, whatever his fucking name is. I don't remember. He still comes to the store.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I got a call one day, Joey, why'd you light Epavaya on fire last night in the bathroom? That wasn't me. I was Don Barris. I guess he hated Jews or he was German.
Oh, that guy. And the German,
come in at night and you go like this to him. He hates.
He's weird as shit.
Yeah, he's weird as shit.
I know that guy.
So they would wait for him to go to the bathroom and lock him in there from outside. And then they would throw fire in the fucking thing. From
Jesus.
It's like it's in a prison cell. And set him on fire and shit. Try to frag him.
I never tried to light him on fire. I was out there laughing. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. You know? Don Barris and a bunch of other guys are trying to light him on fucking fire and stuff.
Is that frustrating, though? Like, your career isn't based on, like, how good you are. It's if you pick the number. Like, for the first year, that must be really frustrating.
You do what you can in the beginning until you start to figure it out. There was an open mic in San Francisco at the Punchline on Sunday nights, and people would go up there, and they would put you on a list, but there was no names. There was no numbers.
Mm-hmm.
The guy would come up to you 5 minutes before and go, you're next, and he would walk past you and glare at you. I did it one time. I told the guy to go fuck himself, and I saw him at the fucking Laugh Factory, and I go, remember me, bitch? And he was like, fuck you, fuck you, motherfucker, that night you tried to fuck with us.
It's hilarious.
Fuck you, motherfucker, doing that to a comedian. You know, people don't do that. That's the respect factor I didn't like about the beginning of comedy.
Right.
And then here, you get even worse until you book something.
Right.
See, that's what I always tell young comics when they come out. Try to book something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care. Well, I don't care if you got to suck 10 dicks. Just get it out of the way now.
Get it.
Book something. Book something so that people see you, the booking agents, and they give you a little work at the improv, even them saying, you know, they give you a little love. But it's all based on that. They don't give a fuck how funny you are. Oh, this guy's going to be fun. You know what? If this guy booked the fucking part on what's the show with Vergara, American Family, even if it's a plumber, and people say you booked a role on there, guess what? He might book a role on a pilot that's fucking Seinfeld. And here, we're going to turn him down. No, that's not going to happen. It's like when you go to jail and you write letters of recommendation. If you get a judge that has political aspirations, that guy, every letter to him is 250 people. Because when you die, they make 250 mass cards. Everybody knows at least 250 people, dentists, lawyers, communists. Mm-hmm. So every time you send a, if I send a letter in Lee's behalf because you're a swindler, you're really Bernie Madoff. I gave him $100 last week. He lost it all in Vegas. I invested in this motherfucker.
He walked away.
He was
no
a
reason.
Stock fraud. He told me he was a poker player. I said, well, let me stake this guy for 20 points. You know what I'm saying? Nothing. He came back with rabbit ears.
Walked away.
Hilarious.
Don't walk away.
How long were you in New York for running and gunning before somebody took notice of you?
I was there till like I said, like 99. I just like.
So the first thing was Keenan Ivory Wayans?
The first. Like, I'd done like some. Like, they had an Uptown Comedy Club TV show. And I did like stand there.
That was 125th Street. Yeah, on the other side. Right, yeah. I remember that. So I almost walked over there and I was like, I don't think so.
That place used to scare me too. Like, I used to go there.
I used to cop night. Right down on our Broadway. Oh, there was a health food store, Mr. Wendell.
I think I remember that.
That was when that jam was out. Mr. Wendell. He was an old dude.
That's hilarious.
And he would always give me chocolate Thai weed and I always try to shoplift one from his hand like a magician. You gotta bring that paper back, son. There's only a 20 in here.
It's hilarious.
All right, so you did Uptown Comedy Club. You come out here.
Mm-hmm.
Then you did like Bad Boys of Comedy.
Yeah, I did Bad Boys. And I did Def Jam back in New York, too.
How was Def Jam?
Def Jam was, it was great to do, but by the time I did it, it didn't have the effect that it used to have. So did a good set, but nothing.
Who was the host?
Then Martin wasn't hosting the first time I did it. So you just missed that window.
Yeah. Who was the host then?
Who was the winner? Who hosted that episode? I think, what's his name? Joe Torre, I think, was the host of that show.
Joe Torre was the warm-up.
At first, but then he ended up being a host. Yeah.
When I first started comedy, that was one of the first tapes I got.
Oh, right.
The Best of Def Jam with the kid from Jersey, Bill Bellamy.
Bill Bellamy, yeah.
And one of the guys is Joe Torre. And until this day, I just saw Joe Torre. I always tell him that joke about my brother's a save the whale type motherfucker. Me, I bought a gun for protection. Shit. I go to the ATM and I dressed up in a tuxedo with a gun. You know, shit like that. I laughed my ass off when I heard that at first. That was one of the first things I bought. I really liked BET. That wasn't on BET. It was on HBO. I saw a lot of fucking people on there blow up a room. But I'm going to tell you who was the most memorable person I ever seen blow up a room on there.
Mm-hmm.
D.L. Hughley.
Oh, okay.
As an MC.
Right.
Which is tough. He just took that fucking room and fucked them up. Fucked them fucking people up to pieces. I had never seen that many people blind. Dog, the best place I ever saw a movie was on 178th Street.
Mm-hmm.
I was telling Lydia that I went to see Rambo. That movie theater was packed with black people. Rambo 2, 1985. Uh-huh. He got the Russian and he opens his eyes in the mud.
Uh-huh.
Dog, black people were fucking jumping up and down that movie theater. They were yelling, that white boy's a bad motherfucker. I told you that white motherfucker was bad. Oh, it was hysterical.
That's hilarious.
I saw him. That's what I saw D.L. Hughley blow up.
Uh-huh.
He fucking took it apart, man.
Yeah, that show, Mad Stars.
Mad Stars.
Mad Stars. You got on, even if you didn't become a star, you'd be on that tour. You'd be making money. So, you know, I was like seeing people get their shit off on it. And I was just dying to get up. But I wasn't even ready then yet either, you know. I was still like working on my shit, trying to figure out. And then finally I had a set together and I got on, you know. But it was just... missed that window, you know. And I did it twice. I did it twice. I did it again where it was like an all-star show, and that was like.
Now one of them you had dreads on.
Yeah, both of them I had dreads on.
Both of them, okay.
One was just longer dreads and shit, and then I did good on that one too, but nothing. The show just didn't have the power it used to have.
Were you disappointed?
It's not disappointed. Like, if I knew what I knew now, then I could have did something with it. But you just didn't know. You just like, you did the set, it's going to air, I'm going to get these phone calls. Nothing.
And there was no social media.
There's no social media either.
There was no social
media. There's nothing you could do.
Yeah, that's crazy. There was no social media.
Didn't you have a similar experience with The Longest Yard?
Yeah, that's why it's kind of weird when you do something, you're expecting so much in return, and nothing happens. And I tell people, that was my breaking point, like 8 months after that. Once that movie came out on DVD, and I was still getting problems with auditions, I didn't know how to handle it.
Right.
I didn't know. And then I see Tracy Morgan on TV after it, and fucking the black dude with muscles. That motherfucker scored that movie from that. That's his whole career.
Yeah, Terry Crews.
Terry Crews, yeah.
You know, and here I am living on fucking Schrader in Hollywood and shit. Back by, Selma. You know, when you're living by Selma, you get fucked up.
Yeah.
Shit's not right.
It's shady. And that's a shady block.
That's a shady fucking block. Not anymore.
They cleaned it up.
Not anymore. Now they cleaned it up. So now, what CD did you do that Conan produced it?
Last year, I did my first comedy album. And I was, me and my manager, I got a good manager now, his name is Hunter Seedman. Like like I said, I had managers where, hey man, these people like me and they want to do something. They say, all right, cool. And then they'll never investigate it. Like people who didn't care. Or if you did something and you could make something out of it, they just didn't care or follow any leads. I don't know what the fuck they were doing.
Unless they get the leads, sometimes they don't want to fuck with it. It's really weird.
It's stupid.
If they don't know from A to Z, they're like, we called, but the guy sounded fishy. Then you bump into the dude a year later, and you're like, dog, your manager never called me.
Right.
We didn't think you wanted to do the project. And you're like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Right.
Like when I did basketball one day, as the third day I was on the set, they're like, hey, man, we called the comedy store looking for you for Mafia. Remember they did the movie with Jay Moore, married the Italian people, like 98?
Mm-hmm.
I was pissed. The guy goes, yeah, we called the store twice. We talked to the guy, the Italian coordinator. By that time, he was fired.
Oh, shit.
By that time, he was a goofy fucker. He was only there for like 2 months. He was drinking and shit. So that pisses you the fuck off.
Yeah, these are like opportunities and shit that, you know, could move you further up the ladder. And you're like, but, you know, fuck it. But what was the question you asked anyway?
You're on Conan.
So I'm on Conan. So Conan came at me. And I guess the reason why, because Conan liked me from before, and I'd done the show 3 times, and then the third time I did it, they was like, hey, we're planning on like starting a record label, and we're thinking about wanting to know if you were ever recording an album, if you want to do one, and we could talk about doing one with you. And I was like, all right, I'm trying to do one, but this is probably the best place to do it, and I'm excited, and I like the fact that you like me like that, that you want to fuck with me like that. So yeah, I'll fuck with you. Let's do it. And so we taped it in La Jolla at the Comedy Store and then released it last May. It's called 100% Half-Ass, and it's at teamcocorecords.com. It's like, fuck it. And then now I got to do a special, you know? I got like another hour ready, and with all the stuff, that some of the stuff you mentioned, and I just got to get that shit together and do it, because you got to put your content out there, and I got to get my social, like, you guys, you got your social media stuff together. I'm terrible with that. I got to get better at that. This industry is not going to help me, so I got to do as much as I can to help.
You have an agent?
I got a manager, no agent.
Writing agent, no literary agent?
Nah, my stuff is like referrals.
And from
writing on shows and other writers, or these young comics getting deals, and they're like, they see me at the store, and they're like, you're a good writer, you've written on shows, you want to work with me? Like, that's how Gerard, you know, hit me up. And he's like, you know, here's a funny story about Gerard. Like, remember when Facebook, MySpace was out? Some people used to hit me up randomly on MySpace. Like, you know, because some people see me on Def Jam and them shows, and they hit you up, say, hey, man, I'm thinking about doing comedy. You know, what should I do? And should I move out to LA? And blah, blah, blah. And I say, yeah, if you want to do it, come on, move out here. And when you get here, just hustle and grind and take this thing serious and blah, 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 blah. And Gerard was one of those people that hit me. And I had no idea. He just told me. And we hung out since he got here for a few years. And he just told me, maybe this year, hey man, I was that dude that hit you up on MySpace and you told me to come out here. Isn't that fucking crazy?
That's fucking crazy.
If you think about it, then you did get something from doing the Def Jam show.
Yeah.
It's just like way later. That's so cool.
Yeah. That's true.
I've always told you that these little guys are my future.
Yeah.
These young cats, one of them is going to pop a show and go, I want you to be my uncle.
Yeah, your uncle.
And the show's going to be a number one hit. And I was jerking myself the fuck off for years doing this and that. And that's how this game works, you know. I learned one thing as a comic, that when you wanted something really bad, instead of, like, as a comic, you wanted to go to Montreal.
Right.
And then you don't go. Well, sometimes you do go, and you're like, all that shit for nothing.
Right.
I put all that shit in for nothing. For years, I wanted to play Catch a Rising Star.
Yeah.
For years, I wanted to play the one in Reno and Vegas, and I fucking tormented that guy, and he kept telling me, no. I saw your tape, you're dirty, blah, blah. And then one day, I got a call from Jimmy Schubert. Hey, dog, I need a feature for Reno. What the fuck? For years, I've been trying to torture this fucking guy, and now you're going to walk me in there.
Hilarious.
No tape, no nothing. You know what I'm saying? Like, everybody has a feature act. They want to see your tape. You never know. That's the best thing about this game.
Right.
That you never know what the fuck is going to happen.
Yeah, I call it entertainment lotto, but the only way you can win is if you keep playing.
Every day, as long as you put your heart into this thing. Like, today I tell people, on the first of the month, we're all equal.
Right.
You ain't better than me. I ain't better than you, because we're all working for the same dollar. So guess what? On the first, we're all the same. Mm-hmm. It's what you do on the second that fucking matters.
Right.
You know? So what do you think, cocksucker? How high are you? Look at the shape.
I'm pretty high.
Yeah, look at his face.
Look at his face. He got sun yesterday.
Yeah.
How the fuck? Next time you go, Jews go to the beach with an umbrella.
No, he don't. Oh, my God.
Get on the fucking boat. Next time, get a little umbrella for you.
That'd be nice.
This is really interesting, man. I always wanted to have you on. I didn't know this much about you.
It's my pleasure, man.
You're a gentleman, you know, but what you do on stage, man, is fucking comedy jazz.
Thanks,
it's just,
man.
There's a timing and a smoothness to it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it, man. I think you're one of the best working, man.
Oh, thanks, man.
I've been really fortunate. I went back to the store And you guys elevated me. Like, you made me savages again, because I got to follow you guys.
Right.
And the last couple of weeks, I feel in my heart I've had some of the best comics in there from you and Sebastian. And, you know, and I didn't see you back then. Joe's known you, and Joe raves about you. And I started watching you at the store and going, Jesus fucking Christ, now I know this guy's game is fucking tight. The writing is a 10. Sometimes I sit there and I go, gee, what am I watching, you know? And I tell him all the time, I always aspired to that, but I was too lazy. I'll write, but I get too lazy, and that's just a special gift in comedy. You know, I have high energy. Right. I trick you with the high energy and the voice and that shit, and you fall for it. You know, everybody has smoke and fucking mirrors. You have no smoke and mirrors. So, you know me, dog, I'm on the fucking, I'm on the Ian Edwards fucking... Ship, you're a bad motherfucker.
Thanks, man.
The story we're kicking is glory. You know what I'm saying? No more rock. Stop! A little Public Enemy, Lee Syatt. What's up with you, Tony?
No, it's crazy because one of the best parts about my job is I get to go and watch a lot of comedy. And what I've noticed is the best comics are the ones you like remember, like their bits. If you say their name, you can think of stuff they've said. And when Paula asked me who was on tonight, I thought of like three or four of his bits, and I think that's a quality that's like you have it too. Like, people remember certain bits that you say, because otherwise it's just
legendary shit.
Otherwise it's just like, oh, he's a dirty comic, or oh, he's a clean comic. It's boring.
It's a very interesting life we put together for ourselves.
Yeah.
Every morning I have a little thing, and I write my thoughts after my coffee and shit. And there's one thought that always sticks out, that I'm happy this thing worked out. I'm happy that my life worked out. It worked out, you know, whatever. It worked out.
Right.
You have no idea where I was 20 years ago, 30 years ago. It worked out. Whatever's going on, you know, the walls on the office aren't painted. You know, my car is dirty. It smells like sweat.
Right.
But everything else worked out, bro. And that's big, especially when you come from another country. You took me back tonight with some words that you said, because I remember, not the pain. It's not a pain that you think about later on in your life.
Right.
It was this. I never thought I was going to get beat up because I was Spanish. I never thought none of that shit.
Right.
But I always thought I was a little not worthy.
Right.
Like, I look at kids and go, you know, I'll never have that. And then, I don't know. I don't know what the fuck.
I know that feeling.
You know that feeling. And, and I know what you were saying, where you try to fit in. Jesus fucking Christ, how hard is that, you know, to fit in? And I knew who I was in New York. You know, when I got to Jersey, they just put fucking gasoline on me. You know, that was it. Where were you doing comedy in Jersey in those days? Where'd you go to that contest, you said?
Oh, that contest. I forgot where that contest was, but I know they had Peppermint Lounge. And that was like a crazy place to perform. And there was this other spot named Terminal D, where if you got booked at Terminal D, the 2 weeks before that show were ruined because of the fear of having to do that show. It was a long, dark room, and you couldn't see the audience. And when you went on that stage, there was like two rows from the front, there was a cowbell with a long piece of rope. It was in the ceiling, but the rope was hanging down. It was usually like some asshole state troopers sitting at the cowbell table. So if you were performing, they could just ring that bell. And everybody start booing. They're like, we're done with this nigga. get him out. So you have to go there knowing you could get cowbelled. I had a friend. His name was Pat. Pat was like 6 feet. 400 pounds. He used to lie to me that he was 200 pounds, but I didn't know weight back then. We performed up there one night. He went on, and his closer went to his closer in his second joke. That's how bad he was doing. You know, you do your first joke, no response. So, you know, if I do the second joke, that's not as strong as my closer, which is my best joke. I'm going to get booed. They're going to ring that cloud bell. So he was so desperate to win them, he went to his last joke, his closer. And his closer was, imagine a 400-pound guy laying across a stool with his arms spread. And his joke was, this is this is me at the Macy's Day Parade, right? which is funny, but they was not having it.
No.
A 400-pound dude is laying across a stool with his arms spread, and you hear the bell going, bing, 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 bing. It's like the embarrassment of like you're selling out for the joke. You're all out. You're spread out, and they're like, nah, nigga.
We ain't having that. It's like going to your favorite team's game, mm-hmm. a championship game. You got their jersey on, and they get beat,
and they get their ass.
You gotta walk down back to that car with that jersey on. That's a long fucking walk, dog. That's mm-hmm. why I don't commit to fucking jerseys, Jack. That's too much commitment in my fucking world. Fuck you. There was this dude who's the really popular black writer in town.
Warren Hutchinson?
No.
John Ridley?
No. He writes on a lot of older shows. God, the Fagua.
There's a...
A Fagua.
Antoine Fagua.
No, Ralph Fagua.
Ralph Fagua.
Yeah.
He had one of his dudes had an idea about an Italian cop that was a kung fu teacher. It was the worst idea I ever heard. He was adamant about it. His brother was a good dude, but he'd buy me lunch and tell me how this was me, that he could get the meeting set up. Uh-huh. But I had to go for a tailor. And I'm really talking to him. He goes, I want you to walk into the meeting with an authentic Chinese kung fu uniform. I said, dog, that's where it stopped. I mean, the show was so fucking bad, but he had great representation.
Right.
So he got me meetings everywhere. His fucking assistant sent me a list one day, and I had like 3 pitches a day for 2 fucking weeks. I ain't kidding. Damn. We went every day. After the second day, I told him, come here, listen, I ain't coming no more. Dog.
Damn.
This is dead. This is dead. We already burnt 6 people. I mean, to the point where they didn't even let us finish.
Damn.
They're like, you know what? We have a 4:15. Oh, my God. We'll talk. We'll call your agent. Nice so to meet you. Bam! It was horrible.
All of a sudden, the meeting popped up in the middle of the meeting.
It's amazing. The worst people have the top representation. Like, yeah. This guy was like, they love it. He took me there one day. I forget. It was like on Wuxia. A lot of fucking yarmulkes. We went in there, dog. He gave it to him. They're like, we love it. You as a kung fu teacher, you work with the mayor, and you're vigilante, and you save kids. It was fucking horrible.
Hilarious.
And they weren't going to let me do it anyway. There's no way. Mm-hmm. No fucking way. Mm-hmm. And he kept saying, you got to wear the kung fu uniform. That'll pull them over. And I'm like, dog, I ain't wearing no motherfucking uniform on the fucking Paramount lot. I would never sell out. I'd rather be at the store pushing $15 sets.
Right.
Man, thank you again, my brother.
My pleasure, man.
Sponsors, and we'll get you the fuck out of here. Number one, as always, the best, Onnit. Went to jiu-jitsu today. Took 2 fucking Onnit pills from jiu-jitsu. I went to the fucking North Hollywood Park, and I did some fucking kettlebells with 10 more pounds. You understand me? I was out there huffing and puffing, and when I got finished with dirt, I put the kettlebell in the trunk of the fucking car, and I brought back with a 15-pound dumbbell, and I proceeded to do sit-ups. With all this fucking, what are we talking about here?
Onnit.
Onnit. Not Onnit, but Aqualung. What's the name of this pill?
Alpha Brain?
Alpha Tech. Shroom Tech. Shroom Tech Sports. I took 2 of those Shroom Tech Sports. And that's how fucking much oxygen I had in my fucking lungs. So if you're lacking with your cardio, you want a little bit more help to stretch them out, the quadricep mushrooms, Shroom Tech Sport is for you motherfuckers. But don't stop there. We base everything on Alpha Brain. 100% money back guarantee. That's our bread and butter right there. You ever go to a Chinese restaurant, you don't get the pork fried rice, they don't give you the money back. They tell you to go fuck yourself and they spit in the fucking soup. That's what I'm saying. Alpha Brain gives you the money back. We don't even want the product back. Do me a favor. Go to Onnit.com right now and press in.
Church.
Boom! C-H-U-R-C-H. And get 10% off your first order and just stay on it. They'll mail the shit to your house every fucking month. They'll take it out of your fucking credit card, whatever. Number 2, one of my favorites, Hit E-Cigs. You don't want cancer? You got to go the electronic way, cocksuckers. They got 24, 16, 8 milligrams and 0 if you're thinking of quitting smoking cigarettes. And they got one of the best fucking e-cigars on the market. Not only that, 1,200 guaranteed puffs. Joey, stop it. I go to 7-Eleven, I got like 8 puffs from those Hindu cigarettes. Fuck that. I got Hit E-Cigs, 1,200 guaranteed puffs. I'm out of pulse.
I took the wrong one.
Who's better than me right now? I'm looking like Sinatra, Universal Studios. Go to Hitty6.com right now and press in.
Joey's Church.
And get 20% off.
No, no, there's the 50 for
5. Oh, shit. I'm going to give you 5 for 5.
5 for 50.
5 for 50. 5 for 50. They're usually $18. Fuck that. Scratch it. I'm going to give you a whole pack. This is what you're going to do. Hold on 1 second. I got to clear out the fucking lungs. You're going to get
so excited.
You're going to get the 0, 8, 16, and 24, and I'm going to give you a cigar for 50 fucking bucks, all right? You're going to be puffing till fucking St. Smidgen's Day. Go to hitty6.com right now and press in.
Joey's Church.
Boom! And get a deal 5 for 5.
50.
5 for 50 for 50 fucking dollars, all right? Beautiful. 1,200 guaranteed puffs. And also to my Goombas from West New York, New Jersey. Nailed It Life, a.k.a.
Los Goombas Hermanos.
Are you kidding me or what? That's a Jew talking Spanish. Los Goombas Hermanos. What's the webpage? So they go directly.
Nailedatlife.com.
Nailedatlife.com. Go there. The best vapor pen in the fucking market. They got a ton of other stuff there. You're going to love it. If you're a dab user, if you like losing your mind, listen to music, and smoking foreign objects in a fucking pen, they got the fucking best pen on the market for you. You understand me? Why not? You put some fucking...
I love smoking foreign objects.
Oh, my God. I love that glass and all that shit. You smoking those vapor pens. The best vapor pen in the market.
They got torches in the car.
Go to nailedatlife.com right now and press in.
Joey Diaz.
And get 20% off. You understand me? That's how they roll. And let's not forget Iron Dragon TV. Bring you the classic martial art films. Go to Iron Dragon TV right now and press in.
Joey.
And get 2 free fucking movies right now on the arm. When was the last time you watched a classic martial arts film? Tell me the truth. Never, cocksucker. You know why? Because you're sitting there jerking off. Fuck all that shit. Get into something. Do something with your life. When was the last time you learned about Chinese culture? Them poking eyes and flying through the fucking air on strings. Go to IronDragonTV.com and press in.
Joey.
And get
2 free rentals.
Boom! Just like that. So I'm giving you 2 movies. I'm giving you 20% off of Nailed It Life. I'm giving you 5 for 50 on Hitty's Sakes. And I'm giving you onit.com 10% off your orders. All right, people? I want to thank Ian Edwards for coming on.
My pleasure.
My main man, Lee Sayat. Where are you going to be? Are you on the road yet? You got a guy booking you on the road?
Yeah, I got some spot days. I'm going to be at Bonnaroo. And I'm going to be at the Montreal Comedy Festival. Just came from Hawaii.
What did you do in Hawaii?
I did this dude named Shane Price, the comic out there. I did like 11, this club called 1144. So I headlined out there. It wasn't a comedy club, but it was a nice spot. And he put some shows together. And he's got Todd Barry coming out there and some other people. I'll put you in contact.
Nice.
He listens to the whole Death Squad crew and all that stuff.
Yeah, great we go to Hawaii. I'll take Lee and throw him off the fucking plane.
You won't take me.
I'm telling you, I'm taking you. I'm going to drop you off on an island with big Hawaiians, with little dicks, with diet pills. You know what I'm saying? I'll chase you around for 3 fucking days. All right, man. Let's end this motherfucker, Lee. Put some music on. We'll be back Wednesday night. 8 p.m. I love you guys. Thank you for listening. Thank you for Ian Edwards. I love you guys. Stay black. I'm going to be in Denver this weekend, Thursday through Saturday. And then the 18th and the 19th, I'm going to be at Salt Lake City at motherfucking Wise Guys. Did I give shout outs tonight?
No, you didn't.
No, I did not. What the fuck was I thinking? Jadida and your dad. I love you. Chris Trent and the boys over there fucking making the cars. Lorne Rosica, hang in there. Tom Hortoff.
Lorne's a good dude.
Yeah, he is. Frank Berdini, Kaye Joe, Ellie O'Neill, Freddie Corrier, Pat Shea, and my main man, Chris Short. Happy birthday, cocksucker. And that's it. We'll be back Wednesday night for you guys. Thank everybody. Thank Israel.
In the morning, join on Periscope.
In the morning, join on Periscope. 4 days a week, smoking reefer, dropping you out of the house with inspirational thoughts. You know how I do. I love you, cocksucker. Stay black.
This show is brought to you by Onnit.com. Go to Onnit.com and use code word church.
I'm fucking stoned. I don't know nothing about Onnit. I don't know nothing about nothing. I'm fucking stoned, Jack.
Me too, buddy.
I have not been this high in a long time. I'm fucking hungry. I want coffee.
What are you going to eat?
I got to go home and eat lettuce. I'm out of carbohydrates. I'm on 115.
Word.
Yeah, I can't eat no carbs.
It's fucked up.
I got to eat another star and hopefully pass that.
And I, oh my God, no way.
I'm fucked up.
So why would you add to it?
Why would I add to it? Because I want to be more fucked up.
Oh my God.
For a couple hours.
Alright.
Where are you living at?
Mid-Wilshire. Oh, you're talking.
Yeah, you're off. Well, let me just do the ads real quick. Okay, so go to Onnit.com and use code word church to get 10% off all great products like Apple Brain, New Mood, Shroom Tech Immune, Shroom Tech Sport. Also, go to IronDragonTV.com and use code word Joey to get 2 free rentals of all the great martial arts films. Sorry, hold on. Go to NailedItLife.com for all the oil and wax smokers out there for the premier vapor brand on the market. And they also make Los Gumis Hermanos if you're in California and you have a valid license. And go to HateE6.com and use code word Joey's Church to get 5 e-cigs or e-cigars for $50.
Advertising.